Université Paris 1, Panthéon-Sorbonne.
Mais c'est assez intéressant de voir que des dispositifs, ce n'est pas seulement des textes, mais c'est aussi les faire vivre et qu'il y ait des prolongements avec des ateliers. Et ça va me permettre donc de présenter tout d'abord Monsieur Bartholin, qui fait partie de la division de crime économique du Conseil de l'Europe et qui va donc nous présenter ce texte, hein, la Convention de Budapest. C'est le traité, le seul traité international en matière de lutte contre la cybercriminalité, qui fête ses 10 ans cette année, qui est parfois contesté. C'est vrai qu'actuellement, l'ONU a engagé des travaux pour, qui viseraient à une convention plutôt, je dirais, universelle. Mais cette convention, elle a le mérite d'exister et elle porte les bases indispensables pour que les pays signataires ou qui s'en inspirent parlent le même langage.
Merci beaucoup, mesdames, messieurs, bonjour. Je me permets à faire mon intervention en anglais. Ça, c'est mieux pour moi, mais vous pouvez bien sûr poser votre question en français. Je vais répondre en anglais si c'est acceptable pour vous. En tout cas, j'ai une. Voilà. Ça sera peut-être mieux. J'ai une petite présentation. On peut le suivre. Dans l'écran. Peut-être c'est mieux. Yes, I will now change to English if I may. I've called my intervention the Budapest Convention on Cybercrime towards a global legal standard in the fight against cybercrime, because I think that is very much what is here at the core of what the Council of Europe and the states parties to the convention are attempting to do. Exactly to make this convention the global standard. And I will. Very easy. Well, I'm only an expert on the law side, not on the technical issues. First, some few facts on the Budapest Convention. It was opened for signature on the 23rd of November 2001 in Budapest in Hungary. And it entered into force after due ratification procedures had been followed on the 1st of July 2004. So it has now been in force almost 7 years. As of 19th of June this year, we had 31 ratifications and accessions and 16 signatories, that is states that have signed but not yet ratified the convention. As such, it makes it absolutely one of the more successful criminal law conventions that the Council of Europe has in place. Perhaps I should just say a few words about the Council of Europe. I assume most of you are aware of this organization, but just to say that this is, of course, not the European Union, though we are very often being mixed up with them, and because we have the same symbols, the same flag, and it sounds pretty much like the European Council in Brussels, and the. But it's not, in fact. It's a separate organization set up in 1949 with its headquarters in Strasbourg. It's an international intergovernmental cooperation organization, currently with 47 member states, 27 of which are the European Union states and 20 others, including Russia. The only European state which is not currently a member of the Council of Europe is Belarus, because of its lack of democracy, which is one of the absolute the rule number one to enter the club is you have to be a democracy, and you have to sign up to the European Convention on Human Rights. You are, of course, all of you aware of the European Court of Human Rights, which is part of the organization, the Council of Europe. I am from the General Secretariat, and I am working not in the, as it was said here, in the program. I'm not working in the Economic Crime Division, but I'm working in the Criminal Law Division. So I have much more the general. It's much more the general standard setting issues concerning criminal law that I'm engaged in. And I also happen to be the secretary of the Cybercrime Convention Committee, which is a committee of the parties. So enough about me. And the Council of Europe, the Budapest Convention, as I said, it has as yet 31 ratifications, 16 signatories, and it is also one of the conventions which is not only open to Council of Europe member states, but also to states outside. And I think that's one of the most attractive sides of this convention. The problem is global. The problem cannot be dealt with at a regional level only. And the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe realized that already from the beginning and wanted to open up this convention for other states. We are working currently with states all over the world, in South America, in Africa. Senegal was mentioned as one of the states that we have worked very closely with and are still working very closely with. We are working with a number of South American states. We are working with a number of states in Southeast Asia, including, for instance, the Philippines. We are working with South Africa has actually signed the convention but has not yet ratified it. United States and Canada have signed the convention. The United States has also ratified the convention and is actually quite active in the work of, with the convention and in promoting the convention as a global standard for fighting cybercrime. I should perhaps also just mention that in this context that the European Union actually also is very supportive of the convention, and in its latest work program in the field of justice and home affairs, the Stockholm program, which was adopted last year, the role of the convention as a global standard and as the global standard that the European Union would like to promote is underlined. So we have quite some international support for this. I will come back to what is happening at the international level a bit later in my presentation. What does the Budapest Convention cover? Well, in articles 2 through to 10, the areas that are criminalized are described. It's first of all, let's say, the more technical crimes: illegal access, illegal interception, data interference, system interference, misuse of devices, placing bugs and other kinds of programs on other computer systems in order to take control of them or to commit other kind of crimes. And then comes the more content-related crimes: the computer-related forgery and the computer-related fraud, offenses related to child pornography. This is obviously an absolute priority for the Council of Europe and for all states involved in this cooperation to fight child pornography spreading through the internet. And then also finally, the offenses related to infringements of copyrights and related rights. So these are the crimes that are covered by the convention, and which the convention obliges its parties to ensure proper criminalization of and cooperation on. It also covers, of course, procedural law issues, for instance, expedited preservation and production orders in order to be able to get information quickly about data that may be on another system. States have to cooperate, or a system outside their own jurisdiction, states have to cooperate, and it has to be done very fast. Otherwise, data could be lost. That could be crucial as evidence in a criminal court case. As you may be aware, mutual legal assistance in normal criminal cases can take up to 2 or 3 years in order to be from the moment that request for mutual legal assistance in a criminal case has been made to the moment that the evidence is actually handed over to the requesting state. That means that for cybercrime, it's not really very useful. It's perhaps also not useful for other kinds of crime, to be honest. But with cybercrime, there is a particular risk involved in terms of losing time. And losing evidence very, very quickly that can be deleted, moved away to other servers, etc., etc. So as something quite unique for criminal law conventions of the Council of Europe, which normally relies on the general human rights system in place in the Council of Europe, the Budapest Convention, exactly because it's open to non-member states, also has a provision on conditions and safeguards that have to be followed when applying the various cooperation rules, so in order to ensure that that what is done is fully in accordance with basic human rights, and that you cannot abuse your system to, for instance, go after persons or to try to get persons indicted purely on political reasons. Then we have the jurisdiction issues. Of course, jurisdiction is very important. I will also come back to that in a minute. We are currently facing a lot of problems, states all over the world, with how to deal with jurisdiction on the internet, and in particular with regard to criminal law cases. States are, as you all know, bound by international law to respect each other's sovereignty, and that means but criminals all over the world are not really, of course, bound to follow the same principles. That's the first problem, and that is particularly problematic in terms of cybercrime, because the internet as such is in fact a borderless phenomenon. And you can move very, very seamlessly from one jurisdiction to the other on the internet, whereas states all the time have to respect these jurisdictions. Also, these jurisdictions may be somewhat haphazard, because they are very often dependent on the country, on the territory in which the server is placed, which just happens for the time being to host the information or the data that have the interest of the law enforcement authorities. So this is something that we definitely have to work on, and I will come back to that. Then it also deals with other parts of international cooperation, for instance, extradition, mutual legal assistance, as I mentioned, and the convention also obliges its parties to establish a 24/7 network to ensure that their authorities can contact each other around the clock, all the time, and be able to get assistance, for instance, for the expedited preservation and production orders that I mentioned before, but also on other issues related to mutual legal assistance, or merely to get information about what the law is in their country and whether the authorities of the country that is being asked have some information that could be used for law enforcement purposes and that they want to exchange with the requesting state. And then finally, we have a very important and also to a certain degree very problematic provision in Article 32B of the Convention on Transborder Access to Data. As I mentioned before, the problem is for the law enforcement side on cybercrime. The problem is really that we do not know always where the criminals are situated. The criminals may also be able to shift jurisdictions very quickly and very seamlessly, as I mentioned. And sometimes it's simply a lot of work that is wasted, and also sometimes work where the authorities really have to fumble blindly around trying to see, is this really, if we go after this computer system here, is it really placed within our jurisdiction? If not, will we create any diplomatic problems by going there? And they have to constantly make that balancing with the interest of solving the case quickly and get the criminals to justice, and that is a bit problematic. Article 32B of the convention, in fact, tried to deal with that issue by allowing states, authorities, law enforcement agencies, and authorities to make a kind of hot pursuit on the internet, following the trail left by a cyber criminal, provided the person in question and going to access data stored on a website which may be outside their jurisdiction, provided that they have the lawful agreement to do so by the person who owns the data. And that would be, for instance, in the case, let me give an example, we would have a person who has committed a cyber crime. The police actually manages to carry out a house search, finds him, arrests him, and his computer is open. He's on his web, basically, and he's using his data that are stored somewhere else, possibly in another jurisdiction. However, now he realizes he's been caught. He wants to corroborate. So when the police ask him, and it has to be lawfully. I don't mean that they don't have to take him into a corner and beat the hell out of him in order to get him to show it. That would not be lawful. But if they ask him lawfully, and he says, yes, I will agree to this. I'm the lawful owner of these data, and I agree that you can look to them, then the police can do it. Whether it works in practice, I have actually quite some doubts. But the principle here was actually, I think, something that we have to look into in much more detail in the future, and which the Cybercrime Convention Committee will be looking into, in order to find a way to improve the efficiency of law enforcement on the internet, while at the same time ensuring that the proper safeguards are in place so that this is not abused. Now come to what I was already starting on here, the challenges that we are facing. I put here as the first, and it's a little provocative, of course, taming the internet without interfering with basic human rights. I think that's an important issue. The internet has, to a large degree, been seen as the last frontier. This is the place where a man is a man and a word is a word, and the reality is that perhaps a man is a woman on the internet. We never know. But the reality is that the internet is, though it might have started out as a slightly anarchistic and very nice place to be, it has turned out to be something that today is actually absolutely mainstream. We all have it. It's no longer the frontier. It's right in our living rooms. And it has to become much more normal. That means that we basically have to ensure that that the users on the internet, the service providers on the internet, actually use it in such a way as we would have expected for any other media that we are currently using. But that is what I mean by taming the internet. The internet is a force for good, no doubt about that. And the recent developments in the Middle East, the Arab Spring, has absolutely shown how crucial the internet is to ensure that democracy can spread and that people are able to organize themselves in legitimate protests against their governments, for instance. But the internet, as you all know, is also being used for other purposes, and by far more people who are not there to do any good, but only there to enrich themselves at the costs of everybody else. And the internet is also a place where we have unfortunately seen that it's being used to groom potential victims of child abuse, sexual abuse of children, etc. This is a place where the internet actually is very conducive in doing this, because we feel safe. We look at our computer, we feel at home, we are safe, but in reality we don't know who is on the other side. And that is, of course, always a problem when you deal with the internet. So to that degree, there has to be some rules governing how we deal with the internet. Then there's the issue of clouds. As I said, clouds on the horizon. And the clouds here is, of course, not the rainy ones that we have seen too many of today, but the cloud computing. Cloud computing makes the whole issue of jurisdiction even more complicated than it ever was. And as things look today, most of the clouds that are being used actually situated on servers in the United States. So we might have the situation that here in France, a cybercrime is committed by a French national, only having all the French nationals, or maybe some German nationals, some Danish nationals, some Dutch nationals, but all in Europe are victims of this crime. The French police would like to go in and get that information. They can't do so. It's not in the jurisdiction. They will have to request the United States to hand them over this information in order to be able to effectively prosecute the person. So for me, this is something we have to find out. The clouds are great. It's a great idea, but the law has to follow. And this time we cannot, as we usually do with law, say, okay, there are societal developments, law comes 30 years later. 30 years later will be much too late in this case. We have to simply develop new ways of dealing with it. Then there are the technical developments. When the Cybercrime Convention the Budapest Convention was first launched, the only idea in the drafters and the fathers and mothers of the convention was that this would apply to computers. But shortly afterwards, we had telephones, smartphones, and other gadgets. And now, there is a decision by the Committee on Cybercrime, which is a committee of the parties, as I mentioned, that from now on they also understand computer systems as covering smartphones and other phones that have the ability to go on the internet and be used like that, because they are in reality computers. But they were not included from the beginning. That required a specific decision. And as things develop, I'm wondering what will be the next thing that we will have to include under computer systems. We will see. It's a constant development. And then we come, as I said, to what I think is really the crux of the matter these days. Law enforcement and criminal investigations on the internet and state sovereignty. As you are aware, law enforcement is important on the internet. It has to. It's also important that it's not being carried out in a legal vacuum, that proper safeguards exist, that it's a regulated procedure, and that the sovereignty of other states is respected in as far as possible. And how do we do that? I think that this is one of the big questions. I don't have an answer for the moment, but it's one of the big questions that the Cybercrime Convention Committee is currently looking into. We'll spend a few years in the future, I think, in our future work programs, to look into this and hopefully come up with an answer. It might lead to an amendment of the convention one way or the other to ensure that new and more efficient jurisdiction rules will be in place insofar as governing the criminal investigations on the internet is concerned. And then we come to the final issue, which was also mentioned earlier by Madame la Présidente, ensuring a truly global response to cybercrime. As I said at the beginning today, the Cybercrime Convention Committee, the Budapest Convention, is the only existing legal framework for combating cybercrime. But United Nations is also working, as we speak now, on looking at possibility of having another convention on cybercrime, a UN convention on cybercrime. This is a development which could be very good, but it could also lead to quite disastrous results. If, and that is the big if, such a convention is not completely compatible with the existing convention on cybercrime, the Budapest Convention of the Council of Europe. It is often being said that the Budapest Convention, by its critics, that the Budapest Convention is 10 years old, it's outdated, things have changed, it's a completely new world out there, and it doesn't deal with issues as cyber terrorism and similar, really, and cyber warfare, which is entirely true, because we believe that cyber terrorism is something slightly different from cybercrime in general. Of course, some of the same principles apply, but this is something slightly different, and to the degree that it is not different from cybercrime, it can be dealt with in the same way as already covered by the convention. And then there's cyber warfare, which, in my view, falls completely outside the whole issue of cybercrime. Cyber warfare is between states, and it needs another and quite different way to be dealt with than the issue of cybercrime, which is basically states against individual criminals. But the most important thing is that whatever decision is made in the future in the United Nations about this, that it will not lead to a lowering of the legal standards for combating cybercrime. And that is something that I personally could at least fear, knowing with full respect of the United Nations, that in such a big forum as United Nations, it is a lot more difficult to agree on effective rules. And it's, there is always a tendency to watering things down to the lowest common denominator. That's it. This is, of course, also true for Europe. And the Council of Europe is no exception in this regard. But the 47 member states that currently make up the Council of Europe are, in fact, much closer to each other in the legal systems than the global society represented in the United Nations as such is. And they are also more or less at the same level of technical development and use of the internet, which makes a huge difference as well. Finally, there's also the issue of what should be criminalized in such a convention. And whereas the Budapest Convention, as you've seen, is in fact rather restrained in its way in what it criminalizes, I could very well imagine that some states in the United Nations would try to get other content crimes on board and a cybercrime convention, which could be, and that is of course my personal fear, but that could be used to actually go after your political opponents and not go after the cyber criminals. I think I've already spoken far too much, but this is what I would like to say to you today about the Budapest Convention. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup pour cette présentation très claire de la Convention de Budapest. Est-ce qu'il y a des questions? J'en avais une peut-être en introduction. Ça me fait penser à ce qu'évoquait l'intervenante russe ce matin, que la Russie, pour des raisons politiques, ne pouvait pas adhérer à la Convention de Budapest. Pour avoir discuté, notamment dans le cadre de l'ONUDC, à ces problématiques, il semble que c'est l'article 32 qui pose problème, l'article 32 de cette convention, à savoir la possibilité d'entamer des investigations dans un pays, les poursuivre avec l'accord de l'intéressé sur un autre territoire. Il semble que cet article 32 freine d'éventuelles adhésions. Qu'est-ce que vous en pensez?
Yes, I think this is a very pertinent question. In fact, I think that's a big elephant in the room that everybody sees but nobody wants to speak about. The problem is, as I said before, that at the time when the convention was drafted, basically one part of the room wanted to go more in the direction of Article 32B, the ability to carry out investigations regardless of which jurisdiction the data happened to be in. And those who said, no, you can only carry out investigations on your own territory, full stop. And Article 32 was a kind of agreement, of a kind of to reach the compromise. The compromise was that if there's agreement by the person who owns the data, yes, then you can do it without requesting the state, the other states involved, or may be involved first to get their agreement to enter. The result is not satisfactory for anyone. And as I understand that the Russian Federation has already earlier today made clear, they are certainly particularly against this. They consider this to be in breach of international law and the principles of state sovereignty. And that is, as they say, one of the main reasons why they do not want to adhere to the convention. And for the reasons also they would like, I assume, to see a UN convention in its place instead. But insofar as other states are involved, in fact, I'm not so sure that they are particularly interested in Article 32B. I might say that there was also, I cannot go into any details here, but it should be borne in mind that with regard to Russia, there was a particular case, concrete case, that led Russia to be very upset about the use of Article 32B. I will not go into any details here, but there is a reason for the Russian position. I'm not so sure that it applies to other states around the world. Well, some of them certainly wouldn't like to see this development that primarily the Western countries would like to see more ability to act independently and act very fast on the internet. But these are also the states that would that are primarily outside Europe, and primarily who would be the ones who would be have, I would say, probably quite a big say in the drafting of a UN convention. But so we will see which way it will go. But insofar as the states with that the Council of Europe has been working with and are still working with around the world, Article 32B does not turn out to be the big problem. It is there are other issues which can be more difficult, but not Article 32B. The principle is basically sound. The problem is how you deal with it in a legal way, and we have to try to find a solution to that. But that would definitely help us if we do it.
Est-ce qu'il y a d'autres questions ou commentaires?
Oui, je me permets de, en fait, d'élargir un tout petit peu le propos. On parle de la Convention de Budapest sur la cybercriminalité. Est-ce qu'on pourrait envisager au plan européen une convention sur la cyberactivité? Puisque là, on envisage l'aspect pénal. Est-ce que, par exemple, l'aspect civil ou l'aspect administratif pourrait être également envisagé? Je prends un exemple concret. Je suis consommateur et je veux établir une action contre une société qui a, comme par hasard, son siège établi en dehors des frontières de mon pays, qui est établi dans un autre pays de l'Union européenne ou à l'extérieur de l'Union européenne, est exactement la même problématique pour une administration. Donc, cybercriminalité, c'est en route. Cyberactivité, que peut-on faire?
Yes, thank you very much. I think this is another very good question, and I'm glad to tell you that, of course, we always start out with the bad things first, so we start with the crime, but the Council of Europe is also in its future work program has identified how to improve use of internet for European citizens as one of its absolute priorities. So everything to do with the civilian use of the internet is something that the Council of Europe is going to work on in the coming years. We are setting up a number of committees and a number of seminars and discussions on how to improve the ability of users to have the full to enjoy the full potential of the internet, including the rights, how you ensure the rights of the users on the internet. So in a completely other setting than the criminal law setting. Yes. I think that we will be starting. Yeah, well, I think we will be starting already next year, 2012. It's foreseen in our work programs. As you know, or you may know, but I can tell you at least now, the Council of Europe is going through quite a big reform right at the moment, and everything will be redone as of October. So we none of us know in which departments we'll be working after that. But I think the idea is to be working much more thematic, including on the internet, and internet-related issues have already been identified as one of the main priorities for the Council of Europe's future work.
Bien, encore une question, et après on les regroupera après les autres intervenants.
Tout à l'heure.
Well, I think it's a difficult issue because the everything to do with the internet is basically started off in the United States, and it has had an enormous effect on how we do things, on all things related to the internet, including the cyber crime. But I think that, to be honest, today there is not such a big gap between European, French, if you like, attitudes to how we deal with these issues and how these issues are dealt with and looked at in Washington. But again, as with everything to do with the internet, the governments are coming about to this probably some few kilometers after the industry, that have already been deciding how to put in place standards, how things should be working, how the internet should be functioning, and the governments are always running after, trying to keep up with the developments of industry. And in that sense, there is indeed, I think, for better or worse, domination on the from the Anglo-Saxon world, and in particular from the United States.